This podcast is brought to you by Most Valuable Podcasts, leading the league in podcasting entertainment.
Welcome in, my friends, to another episode of Behind the Pen. My name is Mike Rankin, and I will be your host for tonight's show. And real quick, I want to give a shout out to our Patreon page. If you would become a Patreon, we would very much appreciate it. Donate a couple dollars here and there each month for us to provide better content for you. And you also get exclusive content and rewards for becoming a Patreon. Go to patreon.com/mostvaluablepodcasts. And we would love you, even more so than we already do. So thank you very much for those who are and for those possible in the future. We appreciate it. If you don't, that's cool. We have tons of content where you can find us on YouTube. Go to Most Valuable Podcasts and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Tons of content on mostvaluablepodcast.com. And boy, do I have a show in store for y'all today. Now, another real quick thing. I did a show with Brian Billick of FutureSox.com, who's a White Sox writer and follower, and he's close with the organization. He's got inside scoops, and he was actually one of the main guys to break the James Shields news. He also was right on top of the Tim Anderson call-up. So check that out. It'll be on our channel, Behind the Pen. It'll be an exclusive interview with Brian Billick. He's going to go through all the roster moves the White Sox went over, and, you know, it's good stuff, so you should listen to it. But as I get started on this show, I will preview what I'm going to talk about, because there's a lot, you know. Middle of summer here, not really middle of summer, maybe kind of getting on the brink of the middle of summer, if I said that correctly. Actually, what the hell am I talking about? It's June 10th. I guess if you're in summer break and you have to go back to school, which sucks, you're kind of approaching the middle of summer, but summer in Chicago lasts, I guess, till after August, right? So that's where we got plenty of warm sunshine left. But as I mentioned, summer, have to mention baseball. And there's going to be a lot of baseball on this show, so hope you stick around for that. Also going to talk NBA Finals, and I'm going to touch on the Cubs because they're my favorite, so stick around for that. Might hit on some Bears. I know it's getting a little tiresome now because there's not much to talk about, really, it's except like really expectations and OTAs are going on. Oh, these guys are doing well. Yeah, I mean, I might be able to come up with something because I know you guys love your Bears stuff, so... All right, we got to get around the league first because that's how I like to start every show. And it's going to be a little quicker this time. I'm not going to spend that much time, but some news around the NHL. Some exciting and some kind of, well, not kind of, really unfortunate. First, the Stanley Cup between the San Jose Sharks and the Pittsburgh Penguins are sitting at 3-2 in favor of Pittsburgh. For those interested, Game 6 will be in San Jose on Sunday, June 12th, so make sure to check that out. It's a pretty entertaining series so far. Hopefully San Jose can make it to Game 7 at least, because that's honestly the funnest thing about hockey, is a Game 7 playoff game, especially in the Stanley Cup. So, let's hope for that, as just a fan. Unless you're a Pittsburgh Penguins fan, you want to win. You know, okay. All right. Anyway, elsewhere. Now, this kind of sucks, and it hurts the hockey community, but Gordie Howe passed away, and he's a legend. He's a hockey legend. You know, he's known for his own hat trick, the Gordie Howe hat trick, which is a goal in a game, an assist, and also a fight. And in Detroit, you know, hockey town, that really, Gordie Howe was the guy to establish the fact that Detroit was a hockey town. He's been a part of the organization for pretty much his entire life, and the hockey community definitely lost a great one, and we're paying our respects because, damn, you have people very, very popular in each individual sport. Definitely Gordie Howe is the hockey guy. Mr. Hockey. Rest in peace to you, good sir. All right. MLB. Now, I don't know if you guys saw this, but this Yordano Ventura guy, who is often in the middle of scuffs from time to time. And honestly, to me, it's enough is enough, little boy. Stop throwing at people with your 99-mile-an-hour fastball because you're going to hurt someone very badly. That's a deadly weapon out of your hand, dude. And, of course, I'm talking about the recent happenings between the Orioles and the Royals. Manny Machado and Yordano Ventura got into a scrap. Now, I'll touch on that later on in the podcast, but I just wanted to preview that because Earlier, we all remember Jose Bautista and Rougned Odor getting into it, and Bautista took a nice haymaker to the jaw, stood up. You know, he didn't go down, but still, it's like baseball's getting a little violent, huh? It's a little entertaining now. But yeah, I'm going to touch on that. Elsewhere, especially locally, the Chicago Cubs made some moves, and I'm going to talk about that a lot because, boy, did stuff go down. But a major one is Albert Almora, top prospect in their, one of their top prospects in their system, got his first major league hit the other day, so that's exciting. Also, the Cubs traded Arismendi Alcantara for Chris Coughlin. You remember Chris Coughlin? And I'm going to touch on that. I'm going to talk some Cubs later on, but yeah, those are some quick things. I know that wasn't really much, but I really wanted to talk about the Gordie Howe thing and also mention the Stanley Cup, because I'm not going to talk about it. If you want some Stanley Cup material, stay right here, man. Stay right here. Go to our YouTube channel, Most Valuable Podcast. We have plenty of hockey stuff. Sean Anderson, Ricky Widmer, they're doing a great job. Everybody on this freaking team is awesome. So stay here. Listen to us. Listen to me as we are approaching the mainstay topics now. Okay. All right. Now I'm done rambling about some nonsense. Let's open it up with the NBA Finals now. Oh, boy. All right. First of all, you must listen to Most Valuable Podcast preview of the series, and there's reactions after every game. But for me, I haven't really talked about the NBA Finals until now. So this is what I saw. Now, they're going into Game 4 tonight as I record this podcast. So it could be 3-1 going back to the Oracle. It could be 2-2, and we're looking at a 7-game series. But for right now, I'm just going to evaluate what I saw. And it's kind of entertaining, despite the fact that pretty much every single game has been a blowout. And boy, I didn't know if Cleveland would be able to bounce back after getting absolutely obliterated in Golden State in Game 1 and 2. We saw Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green kicking people in the nuts all over the place. You know, does Cleveland have a chance to win the title? Now, I picked Cleveland in 7, and I'm not going to back away from that, but I'm also going to talk about why Golden State's going to win in possibly less games than 7. Because the way they defend the Cavs is something that is going up against what Cleveland has done all year. Now, what Cleveland's done all year, they like to shoot the three, and that's obvious. And they're able to win games solely by hitting like 20-something threes. And that's okay. You can live and die by it. But what Golden State does very well, and this is obvious, they're able to close out shooters. Now, this is a problem, especially with players like Kevin Love, because now, Kevin Love is a very unique big man because he's able to hit the long jump shot and he's able to win matchups down low. Yeah, he needs work down by the block, sure. But he is obviously a huge cog in the well-oiled machine that is the Cleveland Cavaliers. But he has been non-existent in this series and now he's injured and I'm not going to say Cleveland needs him in the lineup for them to win because they proved that they can win without him in Game 3. But if he's healthy, you got to start him. Now, I know I listened to Ricky and Sean evaluate their reactions after Game 3, and they were talking about benching Kevin Love, but I don't think Kevin Love off the bench gives you, you know, he gives you value, but you start him and you limit his minutes as the game goes by. I don't think him coming off the bench is going to help his game more than, you know, it's already damaged by starting. So, Kevin Love, hopefully he's healthy. But really, the story is LeBron James and Kyrie Irving. In the first two games, I was a little disappointed because, yeah, everybody's hard on LeBron, and rightfully so. I have my opinions on LeBron James, but I also acknowledge the fact that LeBron is the best player in basketball. Now, don't give me this garbage that Steph Curry's better. Steph Curry might be a more productive player at this point in his career, but LeBron James is the best player in the NBA. His skill set is to the fact that he can do everything. And I don't even have to go over this because you already know. He's able to stretch the floor in transition, hit a three, hit an open jumper, and at some points he comes up short, obviously, in big situations, which now I'm kind of getting off topic here, but this brings up a conversation with the whole Michael Jordan comp. Now, if they're going to comp anybody, it should be Kobe to Michael, because Kobe, his skill set is probably closely resembles Michael, but nobody's going to touch Jordan. So enough is enough with this freaking comps, because Michael Jordan is on his own level, and then there's everybody else. Once you hit as many game-winning jumpers, you do as many things as Michael Jordan did throughout his career, then come talk to me. And I haven't seen that yet from really anybody. Probably the closest player I could comp to LeBron is, Michael is Kobe Bryant. But anyway, back to this LeBron stuff. LeBron James is the best player in the NBA in his own right. And that doesn't take away the fact that he needs to step up in the finals, and he did in game three. He did in game three, and I'm looking forward to seeing how he responds in game four and five. Hopefully there's game six, because this is a pretty solid matchup. Now, maybe the NBA Finals was Golden State OKC, because, man, that was good basketball. That was awesome basketball. I could watch them play every single freaking day and not get bored. But Cleveland has a chance to make a run at this title, and they very well could win. But obviously, like I said before, the problem lies within Golden State's, one, they're freaking talented everywhere, and two, Golden State, like I said, their defensive arrangements are so tough on Cleveland. Now, we see Kyrie Irving. He's doing his thing. He had 30, I believe, and he helped LeBron. He was a major reason why LeBron and the Cavs and Kyrie were able to win Game 3. Now, they need consistent performances by them in every single game from here on out. A funny thing that I'd like to bring up, too, is look at Steph Curry. Steph Curry, what, had 2 points in however many quarters, like 3 quarters into Game 3? And really, the story, that's really kind of a non-story. If that was LeBron James in an NBA Finals game, after being up 2-0 and he only scores 2 points and their team gets obliterated, that's front page news on every single freaking newspaper, magazine, online tabloid, what have you. And I guess that kind of goes with the whole I'm the king, you know, mantra. He kind of brought it upon himself, all this criticism and stuff, acting arrogant. You know, I mean, he's very full of himself, and rightfully so. He's the best player in the world. But at the same time, a lot of people are turned off by the fact that he goes out, has his own 2-hour-long special, and is like, hey, this is the biggest decision ever. Everybody eyes on me. Look at me. I'm going to Miami. And it pissed a lot of people off. That was the beginning. But hey, LeBron, at this point of his career, he's kind of toning it down a little bit. If you notice, he's not really saying as much as he was in the past, but boy, 6 straight finals appearances, I think it's something like that. He's got to win one for Cleveland, and I think this is as close as he's going to get. It's going to be tough, though, because obviously Golden State is the best basketball team, arguably, in NBA history, better than the 96 Bulls. I wouldn't go as far as to say that, even though technically they are, because they've won 73 games, which is a game better. But hey, you need Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson, obviously, the Splash Bros, got to splash. They got to do their thing. Iguodala has been a nightmare for LeBron, as well as Draymond Green playing tough defense down low. And another conversation I'd like to bring up is Draymond Green a dirty player? In my opinion, yeah, kind of. I mean, he didn't get fined or anything for that blatant kick to the groin on Steven Adams, and he also, there was the double foul, what was it, double technical or something, that went down in the OKC series. The play was Draymond and Adams got tangled up, and as Draymond was going down, he pulled Adams down to the ground, had a freaking grip on his shoulder that if he would have fell, like if he wanted to, totally could have pulled it out of the socket. And that, to me, that's dirty player. I think of Roofnet Odor as a dirty player in baseball, and I kind of comp that to Draymond Green because, yeah, Draymond's really good, and so is Odor. He's proven that he's good too, but, you know, he has instances where he'll spike a guy, and Draymond has an instance where he kicks guys. And how can you not control the freaking leg of yours that goes up over your head as you're, like, that doesn't happen. You're trying to hurt somebody, and it's, you just got to cut that out. But I'm not an NBA official. I'm not an NBA executive. I'm not in charge of this. But from the naked eye, it looks like there's intent with everything that Draymond Green does. So anyway, it's It's been a unique NBA Finals, to say the least. Not so much entertaining, because I could turn the game off halfway through the third quarter and not miss a thing, really, but hopefully the remaining 4, 5, 6, and 7, if it goes that far, is a little bit more entertaining than what we've seen that to this point. And I still got to stick with my Cleveland in 7 pick, but all right, LeBron, stop trying to be a facilitator. You know, this is your time. This is why they got you in Cleveland. You got to be the man. You got to be the king. You got to be able to take the winning jump shot. Don't be afraid to not pass. And I know Cleveland was very good throughout the entire season because LeBron was able to get guys involved. But LeBron, man, this is the finals. This is you. You're the best player. Prove it. Show me. Show everyone why they should shut the hell up when they're like, oh, LeBron sucks. Because you don't, and you're good. So make some shots down the stretch and stop passing when it's obvious your team can't hit an open jump shot. Especially, as I mentioned, the way Golden State closes out on shooters, you got to take control, my man. You can do it. You can bring Cleveland their crown that they've been so wholeheartedly waiting for. You got this, LeBron. But they're not. Even though I have them in 7, they're not going to. Golden State's just too good. They got too many weapons. And quite frankly, Cleveland doesn't have enough on offense to match Golden State's up-tempo pace, their ability to score pretty much at will. And boy, though, the only thing is if Steph Curry plays like he did in Game 3, Cleveland's got a shot. But other than that, it's Golden State's series to lose. Okay, that was some NBA talk. Honestly, I don't really get into the NBA as much unless it's the Bulls, because I love to cry about the Bulls. Other than that, you know, take that what you will. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm going to move on to what I mentioned in the Around the League segment, because, boy, baseball, huh? Baseball, baseball, baseball. People complain about the pace of the game. They complain about that there's not enough action. Yeah, the ball's in play for, like, what, 45 minutes of the 3 hours that are that the game takes to finish. But now it's starting to be a little more entertaining. And honestly, to me as a baseball fan, I've always loved baseball. It's always been entertaining to me. But to the outside fan, we get younger players producing, which is fantastic. And we have guys doing dances and stuff at second base and, you know, doing these things when they get on base. And that's cool. Bat flips and all that when they hit big time home runs. That's awesome, in my opinion. Now, people may disagree, like old timers and people who follow the game who were diehard guys back in the 60s, 70s, and even the 80s. You know, they couldn't do that. If you celebrated a base hit like they do today, you're going to get one in the ear hole back then. It's just a different generation now, and I love it. Like, Bryce Harper's got that make baseball fun again hat or whatever. But now, you look at baseball, and people are doing these things, their dances and whatnot. Look at the NBA. You have these old-time baseball fans watch one NBA game. My goodness. 7 minutes into to game 3, I think it was Richard Jefferson or J.R. Smith or whoever it was, they were pumping the crowd up. You know, they were doing all these dances, talking crap to the bench. And it was 7 minutes into the first quarter of game 3 of the NBA Finals. Now, well, I liked it. I love it. I love to see the emotion. But if you're an old-timer and you hate to see that kind of stuff, that'll piss you off a bit, and that'll turn you off. Like, even in football, I saw a story, and I should have probably mentioned this Around the League. I saw this story where Cam Newton's not going to dab anymore, which, in my opinion, good. I didn't like it. I thought it was annoying. And I personally, now, boy, if I talk about Cam Newton real quick, I don't see what other people are seeing in the fact that he's not this, like, totally non-arrogant. He's his self-person. I don't know. Whatever. I'll touch on maybe Cam Newton another time once football season starts, but it's baseball season, and I wanted to get in this conversation because it's an important one. We've seen two instances this baseball season where high-end baseball guys like Jose Bautista and Manny Machado, they're getting plunked on purpose, right? And it's turned into something very ugly, very, very ugly. Let's go back to Texas. Now, I guess Texas was still really pissed off at Jose Bautista for hitting one of the greatest home runs of all time, and his actions after the fact, the ball cleared the wall and the fans were going nuts in game five of the ALDS to put him ahead in the eighth inning. Boy, you still hold that grudge, and they did in Texas. Now, I guess they hated the fact that Bautista flipped his bat the way he did, and they were pissed, so they hit him in one of the series earlier in the season. And as a result, if you didn't see it, I'm sure you did, Jose Bautista did sort of according to the game's rules now, that was a dirty slide that he did into second base on a ground ball, and Rougned Odor took exception. And it looks also, if you watch the clip, it looked like Odor was trying to spike Bautista with the ball as he was throwing it to first base to turn double play. It didn't look like he had any intention of turning that double play. Now, yeah, it looks like he's trying to get out of the way, and, you know, because of the slide, his arm angle forced him to throw the ball wildly, but at the same time, it looked like he was trying to throw the ball straight down and hit Bautista. Now, dirty player, Odor. He's a dirty player. But he laid a haymaker on Bautista that will be watched for the rest of baseball history. As long as baseball is a part of, you know, current eras or whatever the fact, that's going to be shown over and over again because it was awesome. And another happening. Now, this pisses me off because Yordano Ventura has been doing this for ever since he's come into the league. And he'll show you up on the mound. He's this young kid, and he knows he's good. He is. He's fantastic. Electric stuff. Throws upper 90s, 96, 98, touches 100 here and there. But what he did to Manny Machado was absolutely disgusting. Now, earlier in the game, he brushed him back, and Machado he didn't like it. And then his next at bat, Ventura, first pitch, reared back. Now listen, he was sitting 94, 96 all game, but this instance, he reared back and threw 99 right to the freaking kidney. Now, oh, I'd be pissed. Oh man, you throw your hardest pitch of your start intentionally to hit somebody. A 99 mile an hour fastball is a deadly weapon. Now, granted, it was low, and old time baseball people are like, oh, you know, to police themselves on the field, you know, you could get shown up. You know, pitcher's going to hit him on purpose. You know, show the other team who's boss. No, you don't hurt intentionally somebody with a deadly weapon. And man, that poor Machado, it hurt him so bad that he as soon as he took a step out of the box, it looked like he was going to collapse. But he charged the mound, and now another brawl ensued. Machado's been sort of a hothead himself. If you recall, last season he threw his bat intentionally at Josh Donaldson because they had their differences in a series with Toronto. That was interesting, but in this instance, totally Ventura is at fault, and he got a 9-game suspension. Mike Pelfrey, I believe it was, got a 10, or no, it was Ian Kennedy, got a 10-game suspension, and what does Ian Kennedy throw, 91? Yordano Ventura gets 9 games. He's appealing. Machado, I believe, gets 4. Well, yeah, obviously Machado needs to get suspended, but this is a problem. Now, I'm not going to bash on Commissioner Rob Manfred because he's, I believe, has been a very, very nice addition to the game of Major League Baseball. Honestly, it's been a breath of fresh air. I believe he's done a lot of things to have helped the game, like influencing younger players to be themselves and be excited on the field, which is awesome, as well as quickening the pace of the game, adding timers in between innings and between pitches, and baseball players or hitters can't stand outside the box for an extended period of time or else you'll get called a ball or whatever the rule is. So far so good. And I think Manfred, what he's doing is he's allowing players to police themselves on the field. And I respect Joe Madden's philosophy, because what Joe Madden does is, you know, I'm not going to start anything, but I'll damn well finish. Because what we saw with the Cardinals, you know, with the Cubs, and what I like about what he said is, you're going to intentionally hit our guy, fine, we're going to go to first base and score 6 more runs on your ass because we're already beating you, so go ahead. Now, we're not going to play that kind of game. We're not going to intentionally throw at someone, especially the other team's best player, to send a message or to hurt a guy. That's just not the way the game should be played. I hate it when pitchers hit people on purpose. I absolutely hate it. Now, people like the old timers are saying you have to have that in the game so people can, you know, avoid confrontations. Now, in the American League, like with Ventura, why don't you get in the freaking box? And why don't you sit there while a guy throwing 95 comes right at you? They can't. There's a DH in the AL. There's not going to be a pitcher that's going to, you know, he's protected. So somebody else on the team is going to have to get plunked for you because there's going to be retaliation, obviously, if you're going to do something like that. And that, quite frankly, pisses off the rest of the team. Now, I bring up Ventura because this has happened over and over again. And when you, if you look at the clip of Machado charging the mound, Salvador Perez, all-star catcher, one of the best catchers in baseball, arguably the best catcher in baseball, kind of nonchalantly was like, oh, no, Machado, no, don't go after Ventura, no. You know, like he didn't really make an effort to stop him charging the mound, which I appreciate because I'm sure they're all sick of his antics. He'll stand there, ground ball back to the pitcher, grab it, field it, stare down the runner going down to first, and then flip it over to first, and then he'll continue to stare down the hitter. Like, what are you trying to accomplish there, Mr. Ventura? Are you trying to be intimidating? Are you trying to say that you're terrible, you know, because you hit a ground ball back to the pitcher? Like, I just don't understand the thought process of Ventura and the why he always is an instigator in the game. And there is no room for that. Absolutely none. And that pisses me off. I just wanted to get that in there because we've seen it. I mean, even hell, it was the Twins and the White Sox. Jose Abreu, White Sox, arguably their best player, franchise player, he got hit intentionally. Bench is clear. You know, stuff happens, and enough is enough. You don't need that in the game. I believe, like I said, this isn't on Commissioner Manfred. He's doing a very good job, and he's got more on his plate in terms of budget cap, you know, salary cap and collective bargaining agreements and all that sorts to worry about other than the fact that people are throwing punches and haymakers and almost knocking people out on the field. So players can police themselves, but for the love of God, Ventura, just go away. You're just enough is enough, right? Enough is enough. Okay. All right. So baseball talk, baseball fight, boxing night, right? On the field, whatever. Chicago Cubs talk. We're going to do it because you know why? Chicago Cubs are still the best team in baseball. It's June 10th. Every single time I bring up the Cubs, I say they're the best team in baseball. And yet here we are months into the season. They still are atop MLB. That's the American League and the National League. They're both right on top of both because they're amazing. And I say that because they are kind of riddled with injury lately. Rizzo's out day to day. He's got a back issue. They were forced to go without their best catcher in Miguel Montero for an extended period of time, which forced them to play David Ross extensively and Tim Fedorovich extensively, and that was pretty rough. And of course they lost Schwarber. They're getting over the injuries though, because they're still winning. They have production from Baez, who looks very good. And ever since he returned from his injury, he looks very good. Russell's very productive. He's slumping as of late, but his average with runners in scoring position is off the charts. It's fantastic. He's clutch. He's great defensively. Definitely going to be an all-star this year, most likely, especially with the Cubs fans out there voicing their opinions. Dexter Fowler was huge. Overall, it's just been great. But so some Cubs news for you. It's exciting for me to talk about because I got some hot takes for you. Albert Almora got called up after more injuries went down, and I like it. I'm excited to see him play. Now, I don't think he's going to stay up for very long. He'll probably stay up because Tommy La Stella just hit the 15-day DL. Another injury. Solid player. And La Stella's been hurt all, pretty much his entire career, but he's a productive infielder. One of those guys who you can rely on defensively and with the bat. but now he's done. But Almora, man, he's going to be your future center fielder. You can tell already. He's got the tools. Great defensively. I think he was a 65 or a 70 rate defender. And he can hit. He can run. Got a great arm. We saw him play left field. He gunned a guy out at home. That was really cool. He had his first major league hit. He's going to get some playing time. We'll see what he can do on a team that's kicking ass in the middle of June. So there's really no stress on him because there's so many compliments in this lineup that can pick him up. But I mention Almora because he's going to be on the roster, like I said, until maybe Listella is healthy, if he ever does get healthy, because who knows with that guy. Really, the news I wanted to get to, though, was the trade that the Cubs made. And boy, was I excited to hear about it, because this player was one of my favorites over the last two seasons. And he's back. Chris Coughlin, my man Chris Coughlin, former Rookie of the Year. He's back. They traded Arismendi Alcantara to Oakland for Chris Coughlin. Now, you remember, Coughlin was traded to Oakland this offseason, just before spring training began, so they could open a roster spot for the return of Dexter Fowler, and they got a pitcher, Aaron Brooks, in return. Now, Brooks, he's really nothing. But Alcantara, you know, Alcantara, he was very impressive when he came up initially at the start of his career, but then slowly trended downward in pretty much all facets at the plate. Because I think right now at where the Cubs are at this point with their farm system and their major league club, there's really no room for Alcantara, because I think they're just done trying to fix the fact that he strikes out a ton. And I mean, they did a really good job with Baez. You see Baez's contact rate go up and his strikeout numbers dwindle, but with Alcantara, I just think it was a work in progress that never really progressed. And he's a switch hitter. Valuable in the outfield, plays second base, was hitting really well in AAA for the first time in a couple years. But it's a move that I like, despite the fact that Chris Coughlin's -1.7 Fangraphs WAR is actually the worst WAR grade out of every single everyday player in baseball. But at the same time, saw a quote by Coughlin saying when he was traded this offseason before spring training, it crushed him. It really hurt. It took him by surprise. And, you know, the transition process going over to Oakland, who really isn't very good, and it's an ugly stadium to play in. And the Cubs, of course, who would want to get traded away from the Chicago Cubs at this point when they're killing it, best team in baseball? And he was a very huge piece of their success. Nobody wants that. So hopefully, with Coughlin back, he can rebound and get back to where he was with the Cubs, because really, he's only had three good seasons in the majors, and that was the 2 years when he spent with the Cubs and his rookie year in Florida or Miami. So hopefully Coughlin can produce, because he's a left-handed outfield bat and a solid defender, and he can also play second base a little bit. So that I think the thought in acquiring Coughlin was a good one, because once the Cubs get healthy again, I feel like Almora is going to have to be sent down. And Coughlin is a nice filler, because Soler's hurts. I forgot to mention Soler too. So the Cubs are riddled with injuries here, but they're still able to get contributions from main guys and even Jason Hayward. Jason Hayward sucks this year, plain and simple. And they're still being able to overcome it. And that has a lot to do with the fact that their starting rotation is the best in baseball. Every single starter has an ERA under 3. I don't think any other starter in baseball has an ERA under 3. That's pretty damn impressive. Well, I might be wrong on that. Who knows? But to say, you get what I'm saying. The Cubs have been very good in the bullpen, late innings. I mean, yeah, there's a couple instances where they've blown leads, but not really. And Hector Rondon, top 5 closer in baseball now. He doesn't even get a chance to close games anymore because the Cubs are scoring so many runs. I saw a stat, their record where they score 6 or more, if they're 7 or more runs. When they win by 6 or 7 or more, they're 21-3. But in one run contests, they're 6-7. They're not. Last year, they won every single one run game, right? But this year, they're just blowing teams out. They're just winning everything. But at the same time, they're in the midst of one run games. below 500, but it's no big deal. The fact that they're 21-3 when they score six, when they're outscoring their opponent 6 or 7 runs, that's unheard of. And their run differential, you're going to talk about it, hear about it all year. It's just out of this world. I think they have like 50 more runs scored, or maybe, yeah, it's like 50 or maybe even 100 more runs scored than the second place team, like the team behind them in that category. So, man, this team knows what they're doing. Now, I want to touch on, because the rumors are swirling already, I want to touch on some possible trade targets going forward, because June 10th, trade deadline, about a month and a half away, got to start looking into these things. And I guess the positions of need really that the Cubs are faced here is within their bullpen. And you want to get a back-end guy who's reliable, preferably a lefty. Now, I saw some bogus reports that the Cubs were in the midst of an Aroldis Chapman trade. Don't listen to those, because those are stupid and out of this world. They're not going to trade guys like Schwarber, Soler, Baez even for 1 year Chapman. That's stupid. Very stupid. And Epstein doesn't think that way. Personally, I would love Andrew Miller. If the Cubs got Andrew Miller, whoo, man, oh, I'd jump for joy. And yeah, they would have to give up some value here, but they have the value to give up. Maybe a Vogelbach, because Vogelbach's just rotting away in AAA, and he's a really good left-handed talent. And I see him as an American League player, especially since he's a first baseman and he could DH for you. Team that I see him fitting with is the New York Yankees, who, hey, look, they have Andrew Miller. Now, if you can add in Vogelbach to this trade type of situation, you know, do it. And if you're able to acquire Miller for Vogelbach and some package deal, man, that would be great. That would be great. I think that's why the Cubs are holding on to Vogelbach so long, because they value him, but he can't play anywhere in the National League, especially with this Cubs team. You could probably find a team in the NL, but he doesn't have value on this Cubs team because they have Rizzo. And Rizzo, yeah, he's hurt now, but Chris Bryant can play first base. They have Javi Baez, who's playing first base today. So they have options elsewhere. Maybe he gets called up. That'd be sweet. Get some major league exposure. I think that would be a good thing to increase his trade value, because I think at this point, that's what the Cubs want to do, is trade Vogelbach. And I think they're holding on to him just for the fact that, you know, to trade him, and they're waiting for the right move, because he's a talent. They can get some value for him. So just keep an eye on that. Nathan Eovaldi is also a guy that's been rumored to come to the Cubs from the Yankees. Also, Fernando Abad. He is a reliever on the Minnesota Twins, and he's getting some closer role duty late in the games now, because he's having a fantastic season. Sub-1 ERA, striking out guys left and right. Very productive back-end arm. So we'll see what happens. Those are what's swirling now, and definitely I think back-end of the bullpen is what the Cubs need to focus on. So hope you enjoyed the Cubs segment of this show. There's plenty to be excited about if you're a Cub fan, because look at this. They're over 40 wins on June 10th. They're on pace for over 110 wins. This is nuts, you know, so go Cubs go. Till next time we talk about the Cubs, which might be next week because they're so awesome. Just hang on tight. All right, do I talk about the Bears? You're damn right I'm going to talk about the Bears. Some interesting stuff, I guess, at this point of the offseason. I mean, there's what else is there to talk about besides the fact that we have to wait until training camp? And once training camp starts, then we're going to get going, because preseason games get going, and then I get going, and you don't want to see me get going because I get all red and sweaty when the Bears play. But we saw the Bears try and add some tight ends this offseason. They lost their chance of signing Josh Hill from the Saints because for some damn reason, despite the fact that the Saints have so many tight ends on their payroll, they were able to match the offer to keep Josh Hill. And the Bears were kind of upset about that. And so was I, because he was a solid talent. That would be nice if they had Miller and Hill as their two tight ends. But, you know, so be it. He didn't go. But I see this article here that Jermaine Gresham was plan A, and he turned the Bears down to go to Arizona. And, you know, understandable. Gresham wants to win at this point of his career, and the Cardinals are projected to be very good again in the NFC West and, quite frankly, in the NFC period. But his reason, like, this is interesting. He turned down $12 million guaranteed, $23 million total, to stay with the Cardinals on a one-year deal. Oh, like $3.5 million he signed with the Cardinals. So, holy cow. Gresham, man. Kind of salty a little bit. I understand you want to win with the Cardinals, but hey, man, we got something good going with the Bears. You'd be a huge piece. But hey, so be it. So be it. We didn't get Hill. We didn't get Gresham. So we're stuck with Miller. And they signed. Well, not stuck with him. They were able to keep Miller. And thank goodness for that, because he was very productive. He and Culler have a very solid relationship. He's going to be dangerous in the receiving game, but other than that, it's kind of that position's kind of weak. So they signed an undrafted free agent tight end out of Harvard. So that's something to keep an eye on. He'll probably make the roster if I were to bet. That caught me by surprise seeing Jermaine Gresham turn down a $12 million guaranteed deal to come to Chicago. But that's okay. That's all right. You know, stuff happens. But we have other stuff to be excited about on the Chicago Bears. A very young offensive line with Whitehair, Grisou, and Kyle Long in the interior, as well as a very vicious pass rush that's beginning to come to pass. Eddie Goldman's going to be huge. I believe that wholeheartedly. I think he's going to be a huge part of that defensive scheme under Vic Fangio, as well as Jonathan Bullard, who inked a contract finally. That's very, very good to hear. Also, you have Lamar Houston. How many times have I gone over this? Lamar Houston, Willie Young, Drathan, McPhee, Freeman, and Leonard Floyd. These guys are the real deal, especially I'm looking forward to the development of Leonard Floyd. I feel like, well, players inside the locker room are saying, oh, what the hell are they talking about? Oh, he needs to add weight. This guy's a beast. So all this is encouraging stuff. The thing that I'm worried about, and I've touched on this before, is their secondary. Now, they have young players in their secondary that can fill in and are most likely, if I had to bet, will overtake some starting roles. And I feel like Deion Bush, DeAndre Houston Carson, and DeAndre Hall are all going to play a major influence in the success of their secondary this season. All draft picks. All draft picks in this draft. Houston Carson's definitely going to be on the field in special teams. But what I'm excited about is definitely their front seven. That front seven is going to be a major reason why their defense is very good this year. And how, as a Bears fan, how awesome is that to say? You know, we don't have Christian Jones, Jonathan Anderson, Shay McClellan. All those guys are gone. We have legit linebackers, legit linemen in this 3-4 scheme where you have hybrids that can play both as pass rushers and drop into coverage. Nick Kwiatkowski is also a linebacker that they drafted that could play or do well and exceed in both. So hell yeah, man, that's what I'm looking forward to. Don't give me this negative stuff. Let's be excited about the Bears for the first time in a long time, right? This is legitimate optimism, especially with their young core of offensive linemen and what they have going in their defensive front. Offensively, you have Kyle Long, who's arguably the best at his position at right guard. Grisou, who hopefully will take the next step. And this is a big hopefully, because he kind of struggled last year. Kind of got manhandled. And he's a smart player. I feel like he's going to be able to be in the right spots over and over again. But at the same time, he's just got to build strength. Can he get taller? No. So he's got to compensate for the fact that he's going to get manhandled by giant defensive linemen. But that's okay. I think I'm looking forward to the progress that Grisou makes in year two. And Cody Whitehair, I have a lot of faith in Cody Whitehair at left guard. And they waived Slauson, which kind of sucks now as I look at it, because Manny Ramirez, a veteran backup that the Bears really kind of relied on to be a huge depth piece, he retired. So now Slauson's gone. Manny Ramirez is gone. Yeah, they have plenty of depth in the offensive line, but Manny Ramirez is one of the main depth pieces. So you're going to rely on Whitehair. We're going to see how Jordan Mills does over in the left tackle position. You're going to be fine at right tackle. We'll see, because you got Bobby Massey, but who knows? With the way the Bears are structured, you got to rely on their core young guys, and it's obvious. They want to go with the younger players, and that's not a bad thing. That's not a bad thing at all, because you know, you see what happens when you make shift offensive lines. You see Cutler get his ass beat to the ground over and over again in the same game because these linemen suck. But I think those days are behind us. I see with a capable offensive line, especially the interior, Cutler will have confidence to not see ghosts anymore. As you saw that, as he steps back into the pocket, he's like, oh, God, here they come. After a second and a half, you know, usually you get 3, maybe 4 seconds to scan the field back in the pocket before you got to get rid of it, before you get hit. This guy was getting on the ground in 3 seconds. It's awful what he had to face. Now, I think it's a different story. So, faith in the offensive line is good. Faith in the front seven is good. And we'll see what happens. We'll get more in depth with the Bears. Believe me, you are going to be so happy with the Bears coverage that Behind the Pen's going to provide throughout the season, because, man, am I a huge Bears fan. And if you couldn't tell, have to incorporate Bears talk in every Behind the Pen. So look forward to more Bears content once the season gets going again. You'll enjoy it. I hope you enjoy what I've provided today and in the past. Thank you all for listening as I end this show. Gotta give a shout out to our Patreon page once again. If you become a Patreon, patreon.com/mostvaluablepodcast, donate $1 a month, helps us provide better content for you. You get exclusive stuff. And if you do, we thank you very much. We thank you. We hold very, very thank you. Thank you so much. Really, thank you so much. Follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Snapchat, all those things. Google Plus, we're on everywhere. You know, iTunes, just look for Most Valuable Podcast. Go to mostvaluablepodcast.com. We got everything for you there. I also write some stuff on the site, so check it out if you like to read. Or if you can read, because I can't. But if you can, you should check out what I write for Most Valuable Podcast. But I'm Mike Rankin, and for this episode of Behind the Pen, I would like to say thank you for listening, and I will see you all next time.
Thank you for listening to this MVP podcast. Follow us on Twitter @MostValuablePod for more great podcasts.